Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast. Man, you're hearing this after a weekend in America's Ninja Warrior course. If you don't know what that is, it's Duval County, aka the city of Jacksonville, Florida, where a good number of us attended the live Shutdown Fullcast. By us, I mean those listening and those actually doing the podcast, since, you know, we kind of had to all be there. And some of you all had to be there, but some of you did not attend, from what I understand. There are excuses about being hundreds and thousands of miles away. Those are excuses. I'm just going to be like Will Muschamp when a defensive lineman comes back and says he was being held. Don't come back and tell me that you couldn't make it. Don't tell me that a job was holding you. No excuses, y'all.
If you can't close in space and make the tackle and finish the pursuit, well, the problem was you're set up before the play began, right?
Correct.
You had too much distance between you and the objective before the play even began. So you should have moved to Jacksonville a year ago.
You know, there's a way you can make it up to us if you didn't go to the show.
What is that?
That would be to purchase a Shutdown Fullcast Jacksonville Knights themed t-shirt, which you can do right now on our forever fave sponsors, Home Field Apparel. That's homefieldapparel.com. Right now, you can go to our favorite website, preownedairboats.com, and you can see the shirt design there. You can purchase it if you enter the promo code JAXCAST, that's JAXCAST, all caps, one word, you can get $10 off. So, go there. I was told by our sponsors last night that we have sold, and I'm quoting here, a whole bunch of shirts from people who in no way could have been at this show.
And so you can just lie to people, right? You can just I was there.
What are some of those glorious locations that are now
South
now?
Dakota. We had South Dakota. We had Vermont. We had one from Germany.
No, you never know. Somebody could have flown into Randy Savage International Airport.
Non-international airport.
I was very disappointed that they have an international airport in Jacksonville.
I will say this about the Jacksonville airport as we were circling and looking for Jason. It's a very quick loop if you're going through there. None of these like 5-minute state-to-state deals.
Speaking of quick loops, is it time to talk about how we, more specifically, you and Richard?
Yeah, escaped? Enough with TripAdvisor. Let's talk about you and our oldest son.
Yeah, I called it America's Ninja Warrior course, and I'm really not exaggerating because everything in Jacksonville has to be surmounted via bridge, ramp, some form of hop, skip, and jumping over passes and underpasses.
Can I defend the bridges for a second?
Please.
They're preventing you from touching Jacksonville.
That's true. I enjoy that Pittsburgh, basically, if you wanted to make Jacksonville, you took the SimCity blueprint for Pittsburgh and said, but what if more bridges? Jason, by the way, is recording this from somewhere in Orlando, and he's in a conference room where business is done, and someone is doing some sort of business behind them.
Business closet.
Continues to be done in real time. Yeah, we are here for Universal Studios. It was daughter's birthday present, and I'm just making a regular work trip while also going to a theme park from time to time. I said, hey, is there anywhere in this hotel, in this complex, where there's no music happening that I can just sit for a little bit? And they're like, yeah, go sit in the business room. But people also come through the business room, so we're going to get some ambience anyway. But that's the update on Orlando.
Ask them questions about Rutgers football, or ask them if they think that they can replace Willie Taggart.
There is that. Which, by the way, as a spell one can cast, finding the money for the buyout with Florida State boosters in about 48 hours. That's a superpower and a spell. That's deep dark magic. That's sorcery, if you will. And we'll get to that. We did manage to traverse the wilds of Jacksonville this weekend, all for naught, as as the bad guys won, as the Georgia Bulldogs, who in one of their two times they actually get out of the house a year and have fun as if painting by numbers. I'm going to say woo a lot.
Jacksonville is like a Mommy and Me pottery-based economy.
It really is. It's like Build-A-Bear, but for a weekend of milquetoast adventure, right?
And the empty bins of animal skins, those are exactly the same.
Exactly the same. So, Florida lost, and Richard Johnson of BannerSociety.com, the website that this podcast is anchored to.
The college football community.
Mm-hmm. The college football community website, hive mind determining how we speak about this sport. The collective.
That makes it sound like we're all boning, but we're not that attractive.
Yeah, or that we have some sort of inefficient, huge farm, which that part, completely true. Oh,
that's a genuine business goal of mine, yeah.
Yeah, that's really the business plan behind all of this. Rutabagas for all. The game itself might have stunk. The adventure afterwards was also pretty lackluster because we had to tell everybody, yeah, we have to get back from the stadium. If you've ever tried getting out of the stadium after the cocktail party, you'll know that, like a Roach Motel, it's very easy to check in, very difficult to check out. Everybody is trying to get out at once. And Jacksonville, as we said, a series of overpasses, underpasses, drawbridges, bridges, and five-lane highways leading to nothing in particular. So you're going to be there a while. Richard and I decided to walk away from the stadium until traffic became something less than completely gridlocked.
A good game day strategy for most college football environments.
This is true. What did Richard and I have to do? We thought we'd have to walk 20, 30 minutes. An hour later, we finally stopped when traffic had thinned out and we had walked far enough away from the stadium. By that time, we had settled up next to a graveyard. So yours truly and Richard Johnson were standing next to a graveyard waiting for an Uber or a Lyft to connect. Lyft finally connected. We got out of there thanks to Tiffany's fantastic white Altima with custom red leather seats, by the way, as if you weren't like driving home the point that this was not to be our weekend. Yeah, Georgia red leather seats for the Lyft driver who rescued us from the graveyard, where I will say, as an adult, I peed.
Yeah,
I had to.
That's in the notes right here. Peed in the cemetery.
If you were really committed to the bit, you would have peed on the leather.
I peed. I was not going to do that to Tiffany. She was
that's
our
fair. She can't help her raising.
Yeah, no, she saved us, and red leather seats or not, I had to give her all due credit. I did pee in a graveyard in Jacksonville, Florida this weekend. I feel like it was the perfect way to really like cap the weekend.
You know who else peed in Jacksonville, Florida? In some place they shouldn't have?
Who?
Todd Grantham.
That's right. Todd Grantham.
This is a great time to tell you to subscribe to our Read Option, which is the Banner Society newsletter. And if you were subscribed before yesterday, you got to see Spencer put out a newsletter at like 2 in the... Well, Jason puts out the newsletter because he does all the real work, but Spencer wrote the words along with young Alex Kirshner, detailing all the ways in which young Todd Grantham, old Todd Grantham, excuse me, might be removed from our lives by various cartoon methods.
Leave him on ice floe, lure him into a sack so you could pull him away. There's a lot of different ways to get a Todd Grantham out of your life. All of them are basically shorts from a Wile E. Coyote scenario, but they're effective. That's why they're classics. We haven't done them yet, but really, we can't do them soon enough, given going 6-for-12 on third downs and giving up everything from 3rd-and-1 to, I believe, 3rd-and-18 at one point, and losing track of Georgia's best receiver on a formation that they hadn't shown all day. Yeah. Real basic good high school stuff that we're just missing in the name of emotional blitzing.
You know, for somebody who's so fond of that one hot air balloon tweet, I feel like you would think this is funnier.
If it were not my team, absolutely. Absolutely. But instead, you know, if this were Canadian football, he'd be the greatest defensive coordinator of all time.
No,
unfortunately.
Then we'd have emotional second down blitzing.
Yeah. That's, go.
Then he could potentially give up a 3rd-and-119.
Oh, the dream.
Yeah. The only other thing I would like to say about this game is that Jake Fromm may be the quarterback who did the least to have the most impact. Jake was just going to break you off exactly as much as you needed to beat you. I can't decide if that's more frustrating than somebody throwing like 8 TDs and going for 900 yards to beat you, or whether somebody throwing for like, you know, 250 and 2 TDs, but looking absolutely lethal in the process. I will point out, how Georgia is this quarterback? He kind of plays golf. Think about that. Fewest shots to put you under. Yeah. That's kind of deep.
Puts his way down the field.
Jake Fromm may be the best quarterback Georgia's ever had. And I say that because he's got the most golf-like game. So kudos to him. That's about the kindest thing I can say. You know, Florida was on the whole absolute trash, and Todd Grantham should be kidnapped and put into the bear exhibit at a zoo.
That sounds fun, though.
Festive.
They'll feed him. He won't have to wear pants. Seems like he would love that.
He can just maul things randomly, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if the goal is to find him somewhere where he can be happy without bothering anyone, that would be the humane thing to do. So it's good of you, Spencer.
Well, you know, as long as he doesn't have to do something a third time, I think he'll be fine.
Yeah. I like that this game, basically the decisive moment was Georgia ripping off a big gain, getting a very rare explosive play, which sort of ties up a season-long plot line on this podcast about Georgia being unable to accomplish those, that it just so happened to occur in a game that, well, all of us were paying close attention to.
It just so happened to occur in a game that would upset the mathematical majority of Banner Society podcasters. I find that humorous.
Yeah. Yeah, I as well. I also, there's that, and then there's also how it occurred, which was, what was it, Spencer? Just basically a drag route that had some weird...
It was a drag route by Cager across the formation that just turned up to kind of like a wheel.
Yeah,
right?
A downfield wheel. So like Fromm threw it like 8 yards. And
yeah, yeah. Also the winning, the like game-clinching completion, right? They're like, it was a long completion. That's a long completion if you've been like nibbling away. So congratulations to Jake Fromm and the Georgia Bulldogs, the mighty nibblers that they are. You're the better team. You're boring as hell to watch. Oh my God.
They really do maul you like a bulldog would. They just gum you to death.
They do. They can't get like that much of your arm in their mouth, so they're just like, I'm gonna take it one chunk at a time.
They just slobber on your arm until it dissolves.
Yeah, so the mighty nibblers, the Georgia Bulldogs, congratulations. I hope you lose every single other game and have a miserable rest of your year, but you beat us.
So that's your SEC East report for the week. Let's move on to more exciting things. At least two far more exciting things happened this week. Do we want to go with the one that – do you want to start with the one that happened on Saturday or the one that's happened mostly on Sunday?
I don't know. Let's get that fresh meat on Sunday.
Okay. So how many games did Willie Taggart coach for Florida State University?
21.
Is that a lot?
That's not a lot, Jason. No,
that's not very many.
No.
They
That's barely let's see. Season and a little over season and a half, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's weird. Like I saw a few people were saying like, you know, just objectively this is strange. I don't think I've ever seen this before. We're like, you know, we've seen a coach get fired after 2 years. Maybe we've seen a coach get fired during year two. And we've seen this when there's like off-field circumstances, but like
right.
Strictly for football reasons, as far as we know, at time of recording, that's a new one when the team is not worse than it was in year one. Like
the thing that
for as bad as they look right now, they were way worse in year one.
The plot line that I love here is, or the one that I'm choosing to savor, is that this happened on the heels of a baddish loss to Miami, because it makes it seem as though they fired Taggart because they're just really petty about losing to the other big Florida schools. And I respect that. I'm not laughing. I respect that. I'm laughing in recognition.
Yeah, I mean, it's not inaccurate.
But an improving team. Like, that's the other thing, is that there are so many things about this that do not make sense from the start, right? One thing is the shorthanded firing. I know I can name, you know, 3, 4, 5 coaches who are much worse at their job than Willie Taggart, who got a lot longer than 21 games, right? Mike Loxley at New Mexico, maybe the worst head coach I've ever seen, got more games than this, right? But you know, Mike Loxley didn't get another job, so we don't really have to worry about that as a point of comparison.
Yeah, and if he did, it would go great.
I'm sure.
Mike Loxley also had some other circumstances, which I think bolster your case. You know, as far as I know, Willie Taggart didn't punch anyone.
Punch a staffer?
In the course of these 21 games?
As far as I know, no. He did not, right?
So he's got that going for him.
Yeah. There's also this, that you know, if I think about people who received chances that were much longer than this with much worse results, right?
Is there anything they have in common?
You know, I thought that was going to be it. And in part, yeah. Yeah, because it would be really disingenuous to discuss this without noting that Willie Taggart is black. Mm-hmm. And as a black head coach, he was only given 21 games with an improving team. Not a great team. It's very fair to go ahead and say that you didn't like what you saw out of the team because it was below the historical standards of what Florida State was doing, because it was hard to watch, because they, you know, struggled to find an identity on offense, because they have arguably wasted 2 prime years of Cam Akers' career, right? That Cam Akers, a great player, and a guy who could have been the anchor for that entire offense as a productive entity for a winning team. He doesn't get to do that now.
This,
right?
This came up on PAPN, and I would be, although I'm loath to recognize that show, I would be curious to hear what you guys think. What do you think this regime would have looked like without Cam Akers? And do you think he might have gotten the hook even faster?
I don't know if you can get the hook faster. Like, can you think of somebody who was fired after one season for anything other than, like, for anything that wasn't off the field?
There was the who was it? Southern Miss. I mean, you have to pull off something like turning 10-2 to 0-12 or whatever that was.
You got to be Ellis Johnson, right? Yeah, Ellis Johnson. Maybe one of the worst hires in the history of college football. Period.
I personally am on the stat nerd running backs don't matter train. So, like, I don't know how much of a difference it really makes there. Like, if you don't have an offensive line, then nothing else matters. And Florida State hasn't had an offensive line since, I don't know, 2014 or so.
Since Ugo was a pup.
Yeah. And there's this too. Like, did you also fire somebody in the middle of year 2 when it is a known quantity, a fact that was not disguised either in the hire, in the process before, in research, or by data, that this dude was a 3-year project? And in both of his previous stops, we're talking extensive rebuild, we're talking drywall gets ripped out, we're talking a process where in year 3, that's when things start to congeal and they start to really work, right? You knew this was going for year 3. And you knew that year 2 might not look that great. However, we didn't even get there. So what was the thinking?
So we ask this a lot at this time of year. And that is what brings up for me what is the most baffling part of this, which is, even if you are trying to beat USC to the hiring punch, unless you have a very specific target in mind, who is going to, you know, Taggart was an extremely, and I would argue still is, a promising coach with a lot of good years left ahead of him. Who on earth is going to take this job? Don't say PJ Fleck. Let's save that for next episode. But who wants this job now, knowing that a 21-game hook or less is lurking out there?
Yeah, also this, also if you do get that, right, then what does that say about the administration? That they gave you that, what was the difference? I would be interested to see what the difference would be between you, the person who gets 3 full years, and Taggart, because I bet the numbers aren't going to be that much different, right? That's not, and it's honestly not like, it's not like Taggart walked into a great situation.
No.
Walked into a horrendous situation. There's an entire APR situation at Florida State. You know, there is an offensive line that it's still going to take 2 full recruiting cycles just to get them up to okay.
Well, at least his predecessor is, you know, is, I can't even finish this joke.
Yeah, his predecessor is at Texas A&M.
I was going to say, at least his predecessor is guaranteed $75 million at an SEC gig.
Yeah, also, by the way, it'll like, just at like, where was this urgency a week ago? I know y'all lost to Miami, but...
That's the thing. That's, but, how, that, that's the thing I keep coming back to. Is that how petty the Florida schools are? I'm sure Bud Elliott, another fine member of Banner Society, will have a better explanation for that than this, but yikes, dude.
I mean, if you want to know where they didn't actually deliver in the way that I think mattered most, recruiting. Mm. Like, Taggart was not a top 10 recruiter. Which is stunning to me. If you want to go like,
it's stunning to me because of his history as far back as Western Kentucky.
Yeah.
Of getting guys to Western goddamn Kentucky.
No, dude completely and utterly recruited his ass off at those spots, right? At both recruited well at USF, and he recruited really well, you know, relative to the school's size and reputation at Western Kentucky. So what happened there? Like that's another
tricky one, because 2018, that's a short,
yep,
short time span class, right?
Right.
And it wasn't bad. I think this one is the one you point to as, you know, it wasn't shaping up to be an excellent class. And like, I mean, even with that, like, there's still time, you know.
And even with that, it's incomplete.
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, currently right now it ranks 16th. Okay. It's not bad. A lot of room to grow. 16th with what? 16th with 19 commits.
Yeah.
That's potentially a top 10 class. You know, no way to know where it ends up, but like, recruiting's not bad at all.
No, it's not bad, you know, but it's probably, if somebody said, is it disappointing compared to what Florida State could expect? Yeah, sure, I think so. Sure. I think so, you know. That's the usual shuffling of offensive coordinators is probably a thing. Also, you know, they were sloppy on the field. You know, I know you're still learning to do things, but like, not an impressive football team.
No,
at all.
And to be clear, though, we're Taggart enthusiasts, certainly not up to the standard that you expect from a program with the pedigree and the resources of Florida State. However, 21 games and now you're starting over again.
Yeah,
for a lot of reasons, we would have liked to see him at least get the full 2 seasons. And then if you say it's not working, well, you know, even if you have to make a quick cook, if it's not working, it's not working. You know, certainly agree, this isn't FSU standard, all that, like, not trying to be blind apologists here. And also recognizing that the new timing of the early signing period does completely change everything. Like, if you want to ever dig out of this at some point, you know, you need a coach who has the time to actually, you know, get started. But like, for the further complicating, the ironies there is like, you were literally starting over within a rebuild. The thing about this one is like, Taggart's career is just very hard to assess. Like, WKU accomplished things there that had never been done before. Same with USF. It took a while. Like, shit, you know, shit was not good for 2 years until it suddenly clicked, 2.5 years. And then Oregon, what in the world can we make of that? He was pretty good when Herbert was healthy. And then FSU is another just complete question mark because he had nothing to work with on the offensive line. So, like, the career to this point is just a huge question mark. And, like, it was easy when he was hired. You know, most of the people in our corner of the internet looked at looked at the track record and said, you got to look past the win losses. You got to look at the context. It's great. This is going to work. You know, this is a great fit. This is going to work at FSU. And at the same time, we looked at Mario Cristobal at Oregon and said, you know, eh, they hired a guy because the players liked him. That's not enough. He'll leave, you know. And now Oregon might go to the playoff. And
wait, no, Oregon could finish with 12 straight wins.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, that entire situation happened, right? Like, this is FSU getting first in on the big school buyer's market, right? Like, getting first shot at a coaching search. In part, I think, you know, at least, like, in terms of being first in the market, part of that pressure there is somebody else jumping in. One of those schools that will jump in most likely is USC, right? We don't know that for sure.
Also doesn't know who they're going to get, and who, again, I'm not convinced needs to be doing anything other than taking deep cleansing breaths right now.
Right. On the other hand, you know, like we say, yeah, they're going to get rid of Clay Helton. Okay. You think you know what USC is going to do?
You can identify Clay Helton?
They have hired a former Colorado athletic director who was once told to quit and then said in the press conference, I don't know why I'm leaving. So I'm sure everything will just totally snap into place there at USC.
That means Dan Hawkins. Dan Hawkins to USC.
Oh, it's time.
Fuck yes. Hey, by the way, his not doing as good as expected in the FCS this year, but still fine program.
Wait, I didn't actually know Dan Hawkins wasn't doing radio still. Where's he at?
Yeah, he's which is it?
Which UC is he at?
Yeah, it's Davis. UC Davis. I'm just looking up their record.
Is that one of those ones with a weird mascot?
I think UC Davis is pretty standard. I don't think they're like
They're just Santa Aggies.
Cruz. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, they haven't been near as good as expected this year, but still pretty good. But like the thing I wanted to say about Oregon and Cristobal and Taggart is like, I am just out for good forever from now on. I'm trying to predict coaching hires. It's a crapshoot. Yeah. It's a roll of the dice. Like, I'll you know, this coach is cool. This coach has a fun offense. This coach says funny things. Like, all that is on the table. But, like, asking me to predict who's going to succeed and fail, I am out on that. Like, even the very smartest people can't guess. You know? Like,
no.
Let's just have fun with it.
Yeah, I don't – and by the way, like, USC – They're doing this in part, like Florida State is doing this in part. Go ahead, sort of get, you know, jump the gun on USC.
On a USC hire that we're not even sure is happening.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's another thing. There's a lot of ifs here. And, you know, if there is anyone competing for the services of whoever Florida State is targeting, that's also a real good question. Are they a current coach? Are they somebody who is coaching for another major Power 5 school? Where it's going to be a dogfight in terms of contracts and bidding and outbidding, right? There's also the question, by the way, of like, you know, if you're going after somebody who has an existing job, the security at hand, given the volatility of everything that's happened at Florida State, yeah, man, that might be a question. I don't think having a job at a Florida school, by the way, is, you know, the automatic that it used to be. And I think that every single one of the majors in Florida has proven that, right? Like, it was like, okay, you get to Florida and you're either going to be what? You're going to be a Miami coach who goes to the NFL. You're going to be Steve Spurrier who stays there for 10 years. You're going to be Urban Meyer who manages to win a couple of national titles, or you'll be Bobby Bowden, right? You'll end up staying there for, you know, 20 years plus. These are dynasty jobs. They're not dynasty jobs. None of them are, especially Florida. You know, Florida and Miami both, you know, have had a lot of turbulence over the last couple of years and have struggled to sort of adjust to whatever the new environment is, which I think the new environment there is everyone's got a team in Florida now. Everyone recruits there. It's far more competitive than it used to be. And the three teams at once, all trying at once, makes a much more competitive, difficult environment to succeed in than they've ever faced before. So I don't know if it's quite the job that it used to be, just in terms of how fast can I succeed, you know, because, man, Jimbo Fisher's a good coach. The end was not good. And that doesn't just go for the last year. You know, there was an ugly downturn there. Once he lost his, you know, generational talent of a QB.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the era that we and most of our readers and listeners grew up and we will probably always have the idea that one state, Florida, can support three national title contenders at the same time for decades at a time. And that's counting on a whole lot more than just good players, which you will never again have the same monopoly on them that you had in the 80s and early 90s. And like, you know, FSU, like where you go from here, like I don't really want to get into it. They could hire this guy and that guy and all that stuff. Just in general, like you had a dude who was demonstrably a lifelong fan and left a really good job, and he only got 21 games. How many do you think you are going to get? So yeah. I don't know, man. It's a top 10 job, but like I might stay put.
I mean, I might stay put because there is one part of that that says we have standards, and then there's one evaluation of that that says you're delusional, right? And you know, like that's, and that goes, by the way, with any school that has ambition, right? That's, it's true. There's some fringe element of whatever you expect of somebody that will end up being delusional, right? If you just have the highest possible standards, especially for programs that have enjoyed success for as long as Florida State has historically. You know, there's always going to be an element of fantasy in terms of how good you could be, right? Because someone's going to be disappointed. It doesn't matter, right? That's how it works, you know?
That's half the point.
And it's whether you can sort of tamp down the delusional. And I'm not just talking about fans, by the way. You know, you're talking about admins and boosters as well.
Oh, yeah. That, like, shown through pretty clearly. Like, the school statement was like, we have no choice but to get rid. I know what we have no choice but to fire this guy means. That means the money guys want rid of him. That's simple. Yeah.
I mean, and you know what it actually means? Like, if you actually were using the words as they are meant to be used in the English language, I have no choice to fire you means you committed a crime or you exposed the university to liability on a scale that we cannot tolerate. That did not happen with Taggart as far as anybody knows, right? That's, you know, who knows? We might record this podcast and be like, wow, man, Willie Taggart was running an underground casino. You know, that's, which to me, I don't think you fire him for that. I think you figure out a way to cut everyone else in the administration in on that, right?
If you can do it in Florida, though, it's going to be, the whole thing's going to be underwater down there, right? So that was the problem. The university was about to cave in. He's creating sinkholes with his casino.
Oh, you mean that kind of underwater casino? Like, wait a second.
Literally underwater.
I think it's that you were competing with other boosters' underground casinos, right? Like, oh man, big Jim Calkins, you know, he's been running Tally's best underground casino for years, Willie. He'll never tolerate this. You know, that's typically what I would think of when you say,
Live
oh man,
Willie Taggart.
I have to fire you. That's not what this means. You say we had no choice to. It means that somebody with a checkbook was going to close it, which is...
It means FSU's actual boss, whoever that might be.
Which is just... Man, that's... Like, even at Texas, this is the virtue of having a bunch of money and a bunch of boosters checking in, right? There aren't many dudes who can do that at Texas, right? Like, maybe Red McCombs, and even then, Red McCombs was like... pretty patient. Charlie Strong got a good long trial run at Texas before they decided to hang it up for good. You know, you can do that at Florida State because you just don't have the same number of power players. It's smaller and one checkbook pulls a lot more weight. I don't know who that was, by the way. It's not as easy as like used to be like, okay, Oklahoma State 2 years ago. If Mike Gundy got fired, I know who wanted him fired. It would have been T. Boone Pickens, right? If somebody gets fired at Tennessee, I'm pretty sure the Haslams were behind that, right? They at least pulled some serious strings to make it happen. That's not the case at Florida State. Oh, to finish the thought from earlier, by the way, USC is like all responsible for this on like a couple of different levels because Clay Helton's in trouble because Oregon ended up pounding, to preview what we're going to talk about, cut off a little bit of it now, Oregon ended up pounding USC at home, embarrassing them. Like Holly had a great point.
On Friday
about how they might not fire Clay Helton because he's the one person at USC who hadn't embarrassed the university.
With the information that I was working with
at the time, it was a great point. It was. And then new information came to light, namely that USC got thrown around the Coliseum for 3 hours the other night and Oregon beat them by what, 30 at home in LA in front of a good crowd. I don't mean a bad crowd. No, a crowd like a lot of eyes, but on national TV, they got destroyed by Oregon, a team coached by Mario Cristobal, who got that gig because Willie Taggart left for FSU. That's the circle of life, y'all.
We've talked about football for a while.
We have.
Weird.
Yeah. Feels weird. Feels good.
Let's dial it down. Let's step back from all this serious business and talk something lighthearted. How about SMU Memphis?
Woo!
Was just as advertised, and I'm still kind of mad that we did not cannonball run it from the Jacksonville show directly to the Liberty Bowl.
We're going from Jacksonville to Memphis. We got direct flights every Sunday, every Saturday morning from.
That's what we do on Mid-American Southwest Continental Championship Airlines.
Dot biz.
Direct from Jacksonville Semi-National Airport.
Now I'm trying to imagine him having to live in the .com era and be like www.
No, he just said www. Dot.
Yeah, I guess he said enough W's during his day.
You get on them internets and you come on now. We'll go to Memphis. It'll be SMU. The white-collar strangler facing Memphis.
Hey, man, if I want a white-collar strangler, I'll call Ryan.
Wow.
It ain't here.
SMU Memphis, everything is advertised, man. 3 hours of nonstop fireworks, negligent defense, exploding special teams in both the positive and negative sense of the word.
At one point, an ESPN Skycam that seemed to be devoted entirely to daps.
Yeah, they just followed the dap cam the whole time. A cameraman devoted to an angry Memphis fan who after a face mask call that was like the worst uncalled face mask I have ever seen in my life. Again, Memphis, come for the wrestling, stay for the football.
To the ground.
Yeah, threw Gainwell to the ground by
the
his face mask.
The referee is distracted.
He's distracted by all of these Memphis special team touchdowns. He's distracted by Antonio Bishop and his magnetic ways. Distracted by all of that, Gainwell gets thrown down by his face mask, and the camera. And ESPN's very good at what they do. I don't think we really compliment the men and women.
Their production values are terrific. Their directors are terrific.
Their production values, like the director, because they saw this angry Memphis fan absolutely flipping the hell out, right? And Memphis's crowd, and I'm going to put this kindly because I had a divorced uncle who lived in Memphis for a number of years. Half the Memphis crowd looks like divorced uncles, all right?
I mean, looks like.
Are divorced uncles who are very passionate about the Memphis Tigers. And they follow
this
one dude.
This includes the women and children, of course.
Yes, it includes them. And they follow this one dude who is just heated over this call. And let the camera sit on
very
him.
Very theatrically putting his hands over his mouth and going, boo!
Yeah, doing like the theatrical Shakespearean mob boo, right?
That's great.
They follow him for like a minute as he just gets more and more incensed. And then a cop shows up and they ask him to leave. And I know the camera person is just sitting there like, no, this is good. This is good. You need to stay on him. This guy's going to completely lose it.
Also, Kirk and Chris had to spend the night in the Liberty Bowl, which just delights me. I don't know how you guys feel about it.
I enjoy that they had to endure some working class accommodations for a minute. Yep. That's what I'm very happy about. And I know they were unhappy about it for different reasons, too.
Not that different.
But what a joy. What a blast this game was. Memphis ends up winning. And the exactly the kind of like high flying madcap shootout that you expect the AAC to provide week in and week out. Jason, is the AAC like our most barnstorming freewheel and Mountain West 2000 kind of conference at the moment?
Yeah, completely. I mean, if you want close games and wacky finishes, your best choice is the ACC Coastal. Unfortunately, now you're watching ACC Coastal teams. If you want that with a degree of competence, perhaps not as much money invested into the competence, but competence nevertheless, you are turning to the AAC, particularly the West. You might want to sprinkle in some UCF and Cincinnati, but the AAC West actually grades out in lots of the computers as better than the ACC Coastal, and in some of them even better than the one with Clemson in it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, AAC, it gives you medium tier competence at maximum volume. And that's
also
all we want.
Also, Variety, do you want a true triple option team? Like a seriously true triple option team? Congratulations, we got Navy. Do you want like the next gen triple option team playing in, for some reason, its own stadium in the middle of New Orleans with the best logo in college football? Yeah, go to Tulane. Do you want undead SMU rising from the ashes like 30 years after dying as much as any program has ever come close to dying, with an offense that scores 45 points a game and two extremely happy dudes who run a pony out on the field before the game? Yeah, SMU, come on down. Do you want fireworks exploding for 3 hours straight and at least one, possibly two players on the team who can go for 350 total yards in three different phases of the game at any point? Hey, Memphis, there you go. They got a quarterback named White Brady. And they have a tight end named Joey Magnifico. That's just bonus. I'm just giving you gravy here at this point because Memphis. And like when you get down, you go, oh man, like who are the worst teams? You go Houston and Tulsa. You watch Houston and Tulsa play? They're terrifying, both to their fans and to the people watching them. I love the AAC West. It's like this may be my favorite division in all of football.
And then on the other side, you got UConn. So, something for everyone, truly.
They're contained. I enjoy that UConn's over there like biohazard.
This was very smart of Navy to avoid UConn. Like, yeah, we're fine traveling. We're fine traveling far away from UConn.
Where is it? Stores, Connecticut? Please note that UConn football is kept in quarantine in Connecticut, right?
These are the stores away. Nobody shops at.
Yeah, that's
Stores Connecticut is a dead mall.
Is it the Pottery Barn? No, it's the Nottery Barn. It's a Driftwood clearance house. This was a delightful game. Memphis forever. I don't really care what they get playoff. Like they're like, well, could they make the playoff? Absolutely not. No, it's just not. It's not going to happen. They're not going to let y'all in because that's not how this system works. It's not how America works, right?
Unfortunately, like, yeah, you're too dope for the playoff.
Yeah, too dope for the playoff. We just, you know what? There we go. T-shirts available at homefield.com. Too dope for the playoff.
Really could football. Make that happen. So
no, I'm not.
It would be actually very easy to make that happen. So
yeah, clip this and just have those ready to go so we can sell them.
We
to Memphis
can do
fans.
That every year in the top G5 teams' colors. Yeah, so like just cycle dope. It out. Last year it would have been gold and black. Like, it's simple. We already know how this is going to go. But speaking of SMU, their former head coach, the one who was doing pretty good at SMU and then left, it doesn't seem to be going all that well for him in the SEC West. Chad Morris, Spencer, you jotted down a few numbers here.
I did. I have a few numbers on this, in case you want to know. After losing, they've lost six in a row. Those first three losses, you know, they're all by like around one score. And then, I don't know, their girdle broke. The gut just came flying out.
Jeez.
You know?
That's evocative.
Oh, here in Orlando at Harry Potter World, mm-hmm. saw a, there's a gargoyle outside of the main castle. Actually, there's a pair of them. They were big, fat, razorback warthogs with huge angel wings.
Well, yeah, because they're dead. They've been dead for about three games now.
I asked my daughter, who's like Harry Potter lore master, like, what are those? And she was like, oh, they're called flying pigs. I looked it up and, yep, that's it. But it just made me think about the Razorbacks and all they're going through. Anyway, that was a detour. Let's get back to it.
That's okay. We're going to via flu transport back to the Shutdown Fullcast, where we are discussing a Dementor's worst nightmare. That would be coaching Arkansas, because they've lost their last three games by a combined 112 points. 112 points.
That would be a lot in basketball.
Yeah, no, that'd be a real bad run in basketball, right? And the last one this weekend, you lost to Mississippi State, scored 54 on you, I believe. Mississippi State hadn't scored over 30 in like six games.
they wanted to ship him off to Rutgers. All he had to do was play Arkansas. And, it's not that bad.
Man, exactly. Like, Chad Morris is dying for it. Chad Morris is dying so that you may live, Joe Moorhead. that's how blessed and you are that somebody is willing to
now
go ahead
and
live.
Now he is no more dead.
Yeah, exactly. Joe Moorhead, obviously, brilliant coach, thanks to Chad Morris. Yeah, they have three games left. Western Kentucky. Louisiana State University.
Massive L.
Grande L. And Mizzou, which, as far as I know, that's an L right there.
That's Mizzou's bowl game. Mizzou is going to care about beating you, Arkansas.
Yeah.
It could get ugly. I mean, it will get ugly. It's Mizzou, Arkansas, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, like I was like, oh man, does Mizzou have an ugly loss left this year? I'm like, nope, they lost to Wyoming, man. That's it. They took their medicine, right? Like, nope, got my recommended daily allowance of suck. I'm just going to go ahead and be a pretty average football team the rest of the year. They're over with that. And apparently, I don't know, in Arkansas, the dietary requirements for how much suck you can ingest in a year, a little different than the rest of us. Got some kind of
lapping it up.
Just laugh. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Something about the climate. You need a whole lot of suck.
Face down in the trough.
Yeah. That's it. Oh, our actions are very intense. We need to rest extensively in between them. Between SEC wins, we need 4, possibly 5 years. Every single time.
See, to me, I look at Chad Morris. If they fire him right now, I'm like, yeah, I get it.
I mean,
no problem there.
Like, I mean, at least Florida State, you know, competitive, statistically improving, things happening, you know, still somewhat respectable in terms of recruiting, right? And could, I think, you know, do a lot better. That's, you know, there was at least potential there. And in terms of Chad Morris, you know, and the ongoing confusion about exactly what Arkansas has to do to be successful, right?
So in the Massey Composite Computer Ratings, which compile together every rating, Arkansas currently ranks 112th behind Vanderbilt, ULM, MTSU, and Charlotte. They are really? The second worst team in all of the Power Five, ahead of only Rutgers.
Arkansas in recruiting rankings, by the way, currently sitting at 39th. And you go, you know, that doesn't sound too bad. Yeah, that's behind Cal, Kansas, Minnesota, Northwestern.
Iowa. So behind Northwestern, that's where I'm really like, uh-oh, we got a problem.
Kentucky, North Carolina. Yeah, it's not good. Oh, and current 16th placeholder, Florida State.
Yeah. This to me is what a 2-year coach looks like.
Yeah, like if they fire Chad Morris and somebody will go, I don't know, you guys said that, you know, Florida State was racist for firing. And we're like, well, you know what? He was better than Chad Morris. He's doing way better than Chad Morris. Chad Morris just, and I don't really know what that deal is. I don't know what happened. This is one of those disasters so complete that even if you had said Chad Morris was middling at Arkansas, right? If you had just said, yeah, Chad Morris has been pretty mediocre, I could have gotten that because you go, I don't know, you know, like, yeah, this is bad beyond, like, this is bad even beyond any understanding of acceptably bad learning. This is one of those things where you just wonder structurally what's wrong there. You go, I don't know. Do you not have fresh water? Is there no power in your facilities? Do you not have a weight room? Did you just not build a weight room for like 60 years?
Yeah. I don't know. Could be.
No, I'm baffled. Someone please explain it to me at Stephen Godfrey, Stephen@BannerSociety.com. Just send me your full diatribe about how this happened.
Yeah, it's not that we are racist against Chad Morris. We just hate everyone from Edgewood, Texas.
Those bastards.
Those bastards. It's a total population of 1506, and we will fight everyone.
They stole our ceramics plant! There's a header in these notes, by the way, that just says, Nebraska feels pretty ripe for jokes. Well, Yeah.
Yeah, tend to agree.
There's a reason for that. Nebraska lost to Purdue. A little bit of extra mustard on that, by the way. Does Purdue have its starting quarterback? No. Did Purdue finish this game with its second string quarterback? No. Purdue's on its third string quarterback. In addition to a slew of injuries, literally too numerous to cover in the span of time that anyone's willing to devote to Purdue football. They're
including,
hurt.
Including their only, like, extremely good players still out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Rondale Moore out. So you're just, right now, it's just Brome. Just Brome, it just, like, doing what you do in NCAA football, where you're like, I don't know, does this play work? What does this do? That's pretty neat.
Just calling really good plays.
Yeah, just calling some great ones here, buddy. Pick random. Oh, this is what Corso says I should call.
Nebraska lost to Lee Corso.
Nebraska lost to Lee Corso. Amazing. Nebraska lost 31-27 to the Purdue Boilermakers. This is this takes. Man, do you know what Scott Frost's record on the road is?
I do.
Go ahead.
1-8.
Correct. 1-8.
It's so probably far. Because his players are still wearing hoodies.
Can't go on the road wearing a hoodie. It's cowardly.
I don't want to see these guys in West Lafayette wearing hoodies. You should be nude in West Lafayette. Otherwise, you're not a tough guy.
Just like Joe Tiller, be nude in West Lafayette all the time.
I bet Joe Tiller was nude a lot in Wyoming.
It's yeah, like, oh, please.
No one can see. No one knows.
No neighbors. Go out here. All natural.
Yeah, it seems like it would be wasteful to wear clothing there.
Yeah, it's just going to get blown off you anyway by the wind, to be clear.
Hey, if you go to Cheyenne, you go out to Tiller's place, let me tell you something. That guy, no pants.
He's a genius.
He's a genius, but
also,
I'm telling
let's
you.
Note here that he invented the spread offense.
Yeah. When did you think of it? When I was nude. Yeah. And speaking of naked and lacking protection, you know, Adrian Martinez kind of regressed. Didn't throw a TD through an interception. It's been pretty lackluster so far in his second season in Lincoln. I don't know. It's one of those things where you just go like, I don't know if like one thing's wrong with Nebraska or if it's like 400 little different things. I don't think a lot's changed. I don't tend to think things change a whole lot with the basic makeup of teams from one year to the other, maybe over 3 or 4 years, but not. This sort of still feels like the same team.
I mean, I don't want to say I bought in like to the extent that, you know, people who had them in the national championship odds did, but like I figured they'd be quite improved, you know, maybe like a 7-8, possibly even 9-win type team. But like people had Adrian Martinez in the Heisman odds, like in the top 10 of the Heisman odds. That's the part that still amazes me. And like, you know, he can still put some things together. Not going to win Heisman, but like, you know, he could still prove to be a good college quarterback.
Absolutely.
I just look back at this offseason when like no one knew what to make of Nebraska, and yet they were getting added to the odds boards as like, you could clearly see when they were individually added because, like, you know, the sports book puts out the 20 teams it figures people want to bet on, and then it's like just literally tacks on another one, and it's Nebraska. And they're like, I don't know why people are giving us money on Nebraska winning the national. Anyway, it's been a long calendar year for Nebraska.
Yeah, currently at 4-5. I mean, could still make a bowl game, but you're pitching hard uphill to do that. Son, if you're Nebraska, because sitting at 4-5, your next three games are in Lincoln, right? You get Wisconsin, which, you know what? I don't know. Screw it. I'm not saying that Wisconsin's capable of anything at this point. I'm mad at y'all. Thought you might be good for a second. Then you just turned out to be Wisconsin good.
But Illinois is really good. That's a quality loss now.
That's true.
Illinois is going to like a third tier Big Ten bowl game now. So,
Lovie Smith's beard's going to get some sun on it. It's going to look resplendent. Oil it up.
It's going to turn gold.
And Lovey's just gonna like all of a sudden like look more biblical and divine with every single like passing week, right? Like, when did he get a robe and a staff?
That's gotta be good for recruiting, right? Who would want to play for Lovey the Allfather?
Yeah, who would want to play for Lovey? Literal Moses, right? Like, yeah, sense of direction, like Illinois, like Moses and like Illinois football. We're going to meander a little bit before we get to our destination.
There's going
to
be about 4 decades where nothing happens. Sure.
Yeah, that's fine. but they're at Maryland, which that better be a win. It really better be a win. Because Maryland, who, if you want to talk about teams, people were way too excited about after 2 regular season games in 2019. Yeah, Maryland. Lost again this weekend. And then you get Iowa at home. And as always, I say, if you can't beat Iowa, then I don't know, you could still be pretty good, because anyone can lose to Iowa at any point.
There you go. So Nebraska, you are still pretty good.
Yeah, still pretty good. I think like getting, but if you're going to get to 6 wins, you're going to have to surprise somebody in either the Wisconsin or the Iowa game. And if there's one thing that's surprising about Nebraska this year, is how not surprising their mediocrity has been consistently across week after week after week.
That's true.
Oh, and if we do have some, somebody was like, you know, Nebraska feels pretty ripe for jokes. That's the note Jason has in here, you know, which all I could come up with is, well, they lost to Purdue, which is getting hit by a train, which should be pretty relatable for Nebraskans. I feel like that's a top 5 cause of death for Nebraskans.
Sure. Right.
Still getting hit by trains. I mean, I don't mean Amtrak either, by the way. I mean, like, actual steam locomotives.
Right.
Right? Like,
it seems like it's a recreational activity. Like, it's like splashing cold water on your face. It's like Scott Frost imagined Nebraska.
Yeah.
I think train accidents are such a frequent occurrence in Nebraska that you sort of write it off as like industrial shrinkage, you know. Oh, we lost another 4 good men to trains this week.
Oh. Yeah, Uncle Steve's gone. What happened? Train.
Let's try and cut it down to 2 per week. Make that a goal.
Yeah, this call OSHA. We only killed 8 people with trains this week. Oh, it's a good job, right? Well, I'm looking forward, there's a train. If I'm looking to the side, there's nothing. I'd rather look at the train. Spent most of my day.
Trench warfare against trains, except there's no trenches. Everything's flat.
Yeah. How do you win? Stare that Cyclops right there in the one headlight, buddy. Tom Osborne did it.
Everyone in Nebraska thinks trains are animals.
Yeah. Shoot it!
It's got tons of good meat.
I'm over my limit.
It's already smoked and everything. Look at it.
That's a good horse.
Look at that horse go.
Look at that long horse. My God.
Drew Brees warmed up the game, warmed up the Purdue crowd before the game. And, you know, I think he showed up because there was a pyramid scheme involved, i.e. Nebraska football. You know, if you just tell one friend Nebraska football's good, and then they tell another. Pretty soon we can get everyone to put Adrian Martinez on a Heisman watch list, right? Nebraska's lost 2 in a row to Purdue, even though the moon only let Purdue walk all over it once.
Nice. These are real jokes.
No. You wanted jokes. I got jokes.
Yeah.
More like the Porn Huskers, because I watch them get drilled.
Yeah.
Yeah. More like the Rip Torn Huskers, because they were once great and they're now dead. And are you a Nebraska or are you a Nebraskant? I argue you're a Nebraskant.
No, that was comedy. That was some jokes. See,
there you go. I got all kinds of Nebraska jokes. Speaking of jokes that aren't funny and are very, very real. UCLA.
So UCLA, as we discussed last week, has a clear path to the Rose Bowl. Of course, Chip Kelly would dispute this because he is a predeterminist who believes that once your path is set in motion,
and his full name is Calvin.
Yeah, the higher power will lead you along that path. There's something far weirder. Oregon State controls its own path, destiny, whatever you would like to call it in theologian Chip Kelly's church, to the Rose Bowl. Oregon State, which beat the absolute shit out of Arizona, scoring its most points in a game since 2012 against Nicholls State. Yeah, Oregon State is apparently not bad. And that's cool because Arizona is. The offseason, you looked ahead at Arizona's schedule and it was like, all right, you know, they're going to beat Hawaii. And then they got some more basically gimme wins. And then things get terrible. But there's this game against Oregon State. They win that and they're going to a bowl. Oh, Arizona will be fine. Well, they lost to Hawaii and they lost to Oregon State. And they still got to play Oregon and Utah and Herm Edwards. So things are only going to get worse. But not for Oregon State.
No, apparently Oregon State did my favorite thing where they died. And then they're like, yeah, we went to hell and now we're back.
Now we're fine, apparently.
You know, actually, my skin's great. I don't break out anymore. I've lost like 15 pounds. I don't know.
Yeah, like hell's just a sauna.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's really not that bad, y'all. Just, you know, go come back and start kicking the shit out of people in the Pac-12 in the second half of the season.
There's so many cool people down there. That part is really true.
Yeah, no, hey, listen, man. I met a lot of really inspirational people down there, you know? You know, did you know Mike Riley's the devil? Wow.
Wow.
They told us the Great Deceiver would be very charming.
Yeah, no, he's massively charming.
You will know him as the nicest guy in football.
Yeah, which is...
That's what it says.
This point in the season is so special to me because, Jason, you get to say things like, yeah, this team, they're bad. There's no longer there's not, well, maybe they'll pull it off. Maybe things will change. No, man. This team's not good.
It's over for you. I mean, okay, so like Arizona, if you beat Utah and Oregon, we'll upgrade this to your confusing, right? That's your ambition now.
Yeah, yeah.
If you do that and win the state, okay, we'll call you pretty good. Actually, yeah, we'll just call you a good win for Hawaii.
I mean, somebody asked me on Twitter today, said, is it too late for me to give up on Arizona? You know, or too soon for me to give up on Kevin Sumlin in Arizona? And I thought, you can give up on anybody at Arizona at any time. Like, who's strung together two good years there in a row?
You can give up on any team and any coach at any time. No, none of them have the right to make you feel like this.
That's true. You're not obligated at all. I would say you're way less than obligated where Arizona's involved because consistency has not been thy name over the course of your history. So I suggest the best time to get really pessimistic about Arizona football is right after a 9 or 10 win season. If that happens, yeah, short
sell, 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 sell,
sell. Yeah, did you think about reading a lot this fall? Were you considering maybe refamiliarizing yourself with a sport that you'd let sort of neglect? Were you planning on, you know, catching up on the Criterion Collection, watching a bunch of wrestling maybe? Go ahead. Training for a triathlon? Do it. And then come back to Arizona football the next season after they've gone 3-9 and fired their coach.
Spencer, of that list, training for a triathlon and watching a bunch of wrestling, which one is number one on your goals list right now?
Watching a bunch of wrestling.
Okay, just checking to make sure.
Triathlon's far too involved. Far too involved.
It got in my head while we were playing ping pong in Jacksonville that Spencer should become a biathlete. And
which to become a biathlete, I would need to move to someplace that has snow.
Yeah.
Right. And I would need to learn to shoot a rifle well. I will tell you that one is logistically difficult. The other, physically improbable.
We're going to get it done.
Can I become a biathlete for some place that doesn't actually have winter sports teams? Right? Can I pay my way in?
Yeah, you're going to join like the Costa Rican biathlon team.
Yeah, that is what that couple did. From
Dominica or
something. No, from New York. They were like,
no, I mean where their country.
Yeah, yeah. They were like the biathletes from Dominica, and I think they got like a stage in, and they were like, nope, later. I don't even know if she showed up. I think he bailed with like
the one who didn't show up is the smart one.
Yeah.
I
bet that caused friction in their marriage though. Like, I tried for the country of Dominica, Dana.
After all they've done for us. Yeah.
After all they've done for us, making us Olympians. Please. The other thing we have noted here our notes are fantastic for this episode, which is San Jose State Stadium our most Tony Hawk stadium?
So during this game, they were hosting Boise State, and they were competitive against Boise State. They are not often competitive against Boise State. I don't think they've ever beaten them. So everyone was watching San Jose State at San Jose State, which almost never happens. We're used to them doing things like going to Arkansas and beating Arkansas, which that's real. But for whatever reason, everyone just sort of realized all at once what San Jose State Stadium looked like. It's a half pipe. They play football in the middle
like
of it.
Heaven.
And one of the ramps on the side there has no stands, just grass up the middle. It's it just looks really fun to play video games on. Crazy Taxi, maybe some paintball, you know, all sorts of activities.
Skate 3, where my character goes halfway into it and begins glitching, right? Like,
oh yeah, the terrible skating game.
Yeah, yeah. Goes that flying out of it.
It probably is more like San Jose State football.
I think that's a way more representative slice of San Jose football. Is it glitched and then it started making weird noises and then it beat Arkansas.
Yeah. The question I wanted to throw out there is if there are other stadiums that you look at them and you're like, this would be perfect for fucking Counter-Strike or Tony Hawk or...
I think of the stadiums that I've been to that I thought, man, I would really like to like do something other than this. I think I would want to open up the feral hog statue to play like paintball on. Is it like a capture the flag, king of the hill kind of scenario? Right? Put the flag on top of the hogs and protect it.
Yeah, defend the hogs. You do that in Arkansas and people will join in. I don't know if they'll be using the same equipment as you, but
I would 100% play paintball inside the Jerry Dome. Jerry might. Jerry.
Yeah, they even got a jail.
They do have a jail. They have like the weird, like they have the weird like tiers and rafters. They've got some really nasty choke points in there, right? Which are really good for paintball and point control. So yeah, like I think that's the way I'm gonna go.
Yeah,
paintball in Jerry World.
Who says no?
Yeah, the only other thing I've wanted to do in Jerry World is to play, you know, like a video game on the Jumbotron, on their massive, on the Jerrytron, right? Because that's the entire stadium is built around a TV. You don't get more Texas than that. Then, hey, we got a football game going on. Let's all watch TV.
Yeah. Excuse me. Do we want to just skip ahead to Rutgers here?
Yeah, baby. I think it's time to cover Rutgers week.
So
we got a brainchild. It's getting born.
We a week or two ago, we looked up and realized, like, hey, we kind of have a lot of posts that relate to Rutgers in the works, which is never really an ideal thing to look up and discover. But we decided let's actually make it look sort of intentional. So sort of hastily assembled a theme week. Our first theme week is Banner Society. It's called Rutgers Week. And we're gonna try and put out, say, an article or so a day on Rutgers stuff. It'll be obviously not super reverent of football's mother, but you know, sometimes you gotta sass your mom, you know? And I think
In that spirit, I tossed out the preview for Rutgers Week today, and I got a really interesting question back from reader Scoop K at SMK73 on Twitter. Is there any other thing where the inventor of it is now the worst at it? And a couple of the initial responses were Facebook, the BlackBerry. I assume he meant the technological device, not the fruit. Hydrox was my favorite one.
Hydrox came before Oreo?
I believe that is the implication, yes.
Wow. They fucked that up. Can we add New York City rap music?
Ooh.
Yeah, I was just going to say Eminem, because whatever Eminem does, he is now the worst at.
He invented being Eminem.
Yeah, he's terrible at being Eminem. There's so many better Eminems out there.